everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today I have a guest who actually lives here in New Mexico, and I met him a few months ago, not quite a year ago, and I'm very excited actually to have him on. He does a few things, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to attempt to play one of his songs. He calls it his crazy rock and roll piano, and I'm going to play it, and hopefully everybody will hear it, and then once I turn it back off, then I'm going to bring Nori on, and we're going to do some talking. So how's that? Is that okay with you, Nori?
No problem, Nancy.
Okay, well, we're going to bring this up. It's on YouTube, and as soon as I get it up, I'm going to play a little part of it and let people kind of hear how you sound. Here goes. Okay, Noriel, that was you. Did you sound okay?
Oh, my goodness. I hate to hear myself.
It was pretty good. It was pretty cool. So anyway, let's bring you on so people know who you are. So, Nori, what I'd like you to do is maybe talk about who you are a little bit, what you used to do, how you got into doing your one-man band, basically. That's really great. And then we're going to talk about UFOs, one of my favorite subjects. So it's all yours, Nori, right now.
Well, Nancy, it's a great pleasure of mine to be on your program. And my name is Nori Hayakawa, and I had been a long-time director of a group called Civilian Intelligence Network based in California in the early 90s. It was basically a group whose function was to act as a watchdog agency of the people to monitor the government's so-called Black Projects programs and making sure that there's no, abuse of any powers. And our main focus in the 1990s of the Civilian Intelligence Network was to monitor the environmental impact of Black Projects programs such as was conducted at a place known as Area 51 in Nevada. And, Nancy, because of the activism such as by us, actually there have been some corrections made in the environmental problems caused by Area 51 in the 1990s. And one of them was that they had stopped the burning of toxic materials in the open pits at Area 51. So that stopped. In 1998, we held a huge demonstration right outside of Area 51, and we demanded that the government, first of all, admit the existence of such a facility, and also we demanded that the government move the guard shack of this facility to the perimeter where it should belong to, instead of being, a third of a mile inside the perimeters. This is the only base in the country where it is illegal even to go to the guard shack. The other one was we demanded the government to compensate the workers at Area 51 who had gotten sick due to having in contact with toxic chemicals. And some of the workers died, and, you know, we wanted the government to compensate the families of these workers. And then, you know, these were some of the issues that we were very interested in. And thanks to the big demonstration in 1998, it was called the People's Rally at Area 51, and it drew about 250 people from the United States. Some even came from Canada, but this was a top story of Las Vegas Review-Journal in 1998 in June. We held the rally on June the 6th of 1998. But anyway, I did that for 10 years. I did a very close, you know, detailed investigative report and research on Area 51. And then, you know, I later on, you know, continued with other researches, such as other fascinating, very important facilities, such as Dulce, New Mexico. And fortunately and coincidentally, I now live in this state of New Mexico, and I'm so happy that I do, because New Mexico is definitely one of the most important states in the United States. There are more scientists living here in New Mexico per population than any other state, yet the general population's education level is one of the lowest. But anyway, I have been researching this amazing topic of UFOs since 1963, and I did a lot of things in my life, including being a high school Spanish teacher in Arizona, and then also joining a country western band in Arizona and traveling to Canada at one time. And finally, in 1982, I became a licensed funeral director in Los Angeles. And I worked in that for almost 30 years. And in 2008, my wife and I decided to retire, and we moved from California to New Mexico. And I feel that this is a definite calling. It's not a coincidence. Something told us to move to this amazing, mysterious, fascinating state of New Mexico. And, you know, after I moved to New Mexico 2 years ago, I began creating some music, you know, especially what I call cosmic wave music. But anyway, this is a basic a biography of mine, and as far as Area 51 and so on is concerned, yes, I got myself involved in all of this like on weekends when I was off from work. In fact, in 1990, I took a Japanese television crew to Area 51, to the perimeters of Area 51, and that was in 1990. We interviewed a scientist who claimed to have worked in a location 10 miles south of Area 51, and namely Bob Lazar. I met him three times in three separate occasions. And then in 1990, I took a Japanese television crew to Dulce, New Mexico, and we interviewed a lot of local Hikaria Apache people. And we were even arrested while we were interviewing the people on the street by the police chief over there, who did not confirm or deny that there is a secret base in the Mesa outside of Dulce. But anyway, this is a brief background, Nancy, of what I have been doing. You can see that, you know, I have a wide variety of background, and, you know, being a funeral director for 30 years helped me very much in understanding the various types of belief systems of people and various philosophies and various attitudes. And there's no doubt, Nancy, in my mind, that there are things in this world that exist that we don't necessarily see or are able to see with our physical eyes. And that's my bottom line on UFO or ufology, that there is definitely some reality to this whole phenomenon. And but exactly what it is, I cannot be dogmatic and come up and say what it is. But going back to New Mexico, yes, as I live right now in this amazing state, this is my belief that the United States has the most advanced leading-edge military technology and development and testing programs in the state of New Mexico. Beginning in 1945, the United States brought in many scientists and engineers right after World War II to Albuquerque's Kirtland Army Air Field in 1945, at the conclusion of World War II. And also the United States brought in many former SS intelligence officers from Germany. And immediately, many of the scientists and engineers were transferred to Los Alamos National Laboratory, and then some others were transferred to the White Sands Missile Testing Range in the south of New Mexico. So, you know, there are so many programs that are ongoing right now in New Mexico. As many people may have heard, New Mexico is the headquarters of Sandia National Laboratories, one of the most advanced military research, development, and testing corporation contractor in the United States. That's based in the Kirtland Air Force Base in Albuquerque, as well as Phillips National Laboratory, the Air Force version of the Sandia Laboratories. And so throughout the state of New Mexico, these are all spread out. Los Alamos National Laboratories, as well as, you know, the Holloman Air Force Base, White Sands area. A lot of projects are going on, and one of the most important projects going on today is the Directed Energy Program, or Microwave Weapon Systems, that are being tested at White Sands. I say all this because, you know, if there are any entities that exist outside the Earth, New Mexico would definitely be the initial place of any contact, because New Mexico has always had the most advanced programs, military programs, scientific programs. Many people are not aware that Los Alamos National Laboratory today is the world's most advanced human genome projects programs. DNA research, biogenetics, all concentrated in Los Alamos National Laboratory. And in the field of UFOs, yes, New Mexico is well known for the many, many unusual sightings that have taken place since 1945, especially after World War II, including the so-called Roswell incident that allegedly took place outside of Roswell, north of Roswell, in 1947, as well as the crash at Corona, as well as the alleged crash outside of Aztec in 1948, as well as the most amazing mass sightings of flying saucer ever happened in the United States, namely the massive sighting of flying saucers over Farmington, the town of Farmington, New Mexico, in 1950.
Isn't Farmington up by close to the Four Corners?
Yes, that's right. Farmington is close to the Four Corners area, and of course the Four Corners area has always been the area of high incidence of UFO sightings, especially after World War II. And then, of course, you know, only about 30 minutes away from Farmington is the town of Aztec, New Mexico, the location of the alleged crash in 1948. And then from Aztec, just about an hour and a half drive, is the mysterious town of Dulce, New Mexico, where there has been a rumor of the underground base. And so, you know, as well as northern New Mexico, like Taos, Cimarron, and then also, you know, southern Colorado's, you know, which is right next to northern New Mexico. And so, you know, this entire state is filled with mysteries, and no wonder it is actually called the Land of Enchantment. And it's really, I don't think it's a coincidence that they chose that word.
No, it's not a coincidence. But by Duslac, there's a rock. There's a rock that's supposed to be an old, old rock that has old, old, old writing on it. Do you know anything about that?
Well, actually, I heard of several locations in New Mexico, such as near Los Lunas area, that
where I live,
some kind of, you know, a rock that has strange writings. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised at anything about New Mexico. you know, Nancy, just last December, people have started hearing some low-frequency hums about 6 to 7 miles northwest of Dulce, New Mexico, along the Navajo River. And some people speculate that these low-frequency hums could be part of an extending, possibly underground communications constructions or communications tunnels or even underground tunnels that is extending from the NORAD headquarters in Colorado all the way to Denver International Airport to Los Alamos National Laboratories, and in passing through Dulce, all underground. But, you know, anything is possible, because the United States did have the technology already in 1950s using nuclear devices and to create amazing boring tunnel boring machines in 1950s. So imagine what they have at, now. So I wouldn't be surprised at all these developments. And, you know, in 1980s, the Taos, New Mexico, had a lot of incidences of people hearing low hums. And so that was called the Taos hums. But at that time, many people in Albuquerque demanded the Sandia Laboratories to check these strange hums. But I've always maintained that it may have been the Sandia Laboratories themselves that may have been doing these, you know, experiments in causing these hums. Whether they were a part of underground construction or some kind of experiment in low-frequency waves, I'm not sure. But, you know, these are some of the things that interest a lot of people. You know, New Mexico, Nancy, as you know, is the fifth largest state in the United States, in the Union.
Mm-hmm.
Fifth largest. But yet the population, the entire population of the state is less than 2 million. And so it's a vast open space. And it's a convenient place to conduct any kind of a military research and development, as well as any kind of military projects. And some of the areas, like Dulce, New Mexico, is conveniently located within the jurisdiction of Native American people, the Native American reservation or the American Indian reservation. The town of Dulce is right in the middle of the Kikari Apache Nation. And so it's a convenient place to conduct any experiments without much scrutiny. And this is my conclusion, Nancy, that the United States government, first of all, many people don't know about this at all, but in 1967, the U.S. government exploded an atomic device, or atomic bomb, would say, or device, a nuclear device, a mile and a half underground, only about 20 miles south of Dulce, New Mexico, in 1967. It was the second underground atomic testing that was done in New Mexico. This was 1967, and the government initially said to the people that the reason for exploding an atomic bomb underground, a mile and a half underground, in the Carson National Forest near Dulce, New Mexico, was to help ease the flow of natural gas in that region. But the government knew very well that such an explosion could cause, problems. And one of the problems was the problem of radiation. And lo and behold, the Dulce area has come into contamination from radiation. And even many cows were affected. And so the government periodically decided to monitor the radiation level of cattle, like cows, in that region. And, it's a fact, Nancy, that the town of Dulce had about 4,000 population-wise in the mid-70s, but now it only has 2,600. And there is definitely a health problem among the some women in the Dulce area. There is a problem in the fertility. And this is a very, very realistic problem. And the problem is because of the radiation, that is still there. So it's a very, very touchy situation. But on top of all this, Nancy, in 1975, there began to appear a rumor that says that there is an underground bio lab located a mile underneath the Archuleta Mesa, right next to Dulce, New Mexico. And this rumor persisted and is still going on. And, people have heard about the rumors since the late 70s. It still goes on. And nobody, however, dared to have any conference there in Dulce, talking about underground base of Dulce. And so, Nancy, last year, with fear and trembling, I decided that somebody ought to have an underground base conference right inside Dulce, New Mexico, and I decided to have that. And at first I was very, very worried about the reactions of the Jicarilla Apache Nation, if they were going to oppose anybody coming into town and having an underground base conference right there. So, you know, I was very fearful, but fortunately, the cultural affairs director of Dulce, Hickory Apache person, was very cooperative, and she okayed the having a conference over there. And the conference that I held was called the Dulce Base Fact or Fiction Conference. And, you know, it attracted about 130 people attended this conference, the first time ever conference held right in the town of Dulce about the alleged underground base of Dulce. And, you know, many local people participated in this conference, Nancy, and I was very, very pleased. Initially, the local residents, the Hickory Apache people, were very hesitant to come out and to testify, but once the conference started, one by one, those local Native American people started to testify about their fascinating experiences of seeing some strange objects in the sky, and also, you know, military helicopters, and then even they started testifying about their sightings of Bigfoot, and even in recent years, too. So they all started to testify in that conference, and including some law enforcement officials of Dulce, including a former police chief himself who had arrested us back in 1990 for asking questions to the people, you know, mm-hmm. on the street. That same former police chief, this time, he retired, of course, and he surprised me by agreeing to speak out at that conference last year. His name was Hoyt Velarde. And then, of course, there was another police deputy police officer, Mr. Julian, Gabe Julian, who testified about his amazing incidents in the 70s involving three metallic-shaped, egg-shaped objects flying above the tree level of a ranch over there. So, you know, this conference, Nancy, was just amazing. It was held on March 29th, 2009, last year. And what's fascinating about this conference was that on that day of conference, early on the morning of Sunday, April 29th, March 29th of 2009, about 6 a.m., the residents or the of that motel, the hotel that we had the conference, Best Western Hotel in Dulce, many residents were suddenly awoken by the thunderous roar of blades of helicopters hovering over the motel. And it was around 6 a.m., and lo and behold, two military helicopters were hovering over the motel for about a minute. And later on, several local residents testified in the afternoon portion of the conference that they had seen these helicopters hover over Best Western Motel, you know, the day of the conference. So, you know, this was definitely a sign that there is something secret about Dulce, New Mexico. No doubt in my mind. No doubt in my mind. And so on, and so on, and so goes all the strange phenomena of New Mexico still keeps going on. And, you know, I visited New Mexico a few years ago when I was still living in California. And one of the reasons for visiting New Mexico a few years ago was to verify the town of Dulce, to see how it has changed since 1990 when we were arrested by the police officer in Dulce. But I noticed that there are many new modern buildings in town of Dulce, many new emergency medical facilities being built in Dulce, a brand new high school, a brand new middle school. And my wife and I actually visited last year the town of Dulce, but we were so surprised how many new modern-looking buildings there are, you know, for a town of that only that size, of less than 2,600 people. And we visited the schools and we saw the schools, but we didn't even see too many students. You know, it seemed like it's some kind of a facade.
I'm sure.
That's Dulce, but see, 2 years ago, when I visited New Mexico, I also visited the town of Farmington to find any witnesses to the amazing 1950s mass sightings of UFOs over Farmington. And fortunately, I went to the senior center of Farmington and was able to locate a witness. And he described his sighting the exact way that was reported by Farmington Daily Times of March 18, 1950. On March 18, 1950, the main newspaper of the town of Farmington had a top headline news. It was about a 1-inch thick headline, and the headline said, "Saucer Armada jolts Farmington." It said hundreds and hundreds of residents of Farmington witnessed a strange maneuvering of hundreds of metallic objects flying over the town from around 12 noon till about 1 o'clock for 3 days, beginning on March 15, 1950, March 16, 1950, and then finally March 17, 1950, the day of the St. Patrick's Day. So for 3 days in a row, hundreds of residents of Farmington were awestruck by this appearance of metallic shaped objects, and the number was anywhere from 300 to 400. And they were flying and doing all kinds of formations and maneuvering. And this was definitely one of the most amazing, massive sighting of, you know, UFOs in U.S. history. Yet, most people have forgotten about it, or the story was conveniently, you know, sidelined into history. What happened, Nancy, that was that immediately after the sightings in March of 1950 over Farmington, the U.S. sent many agents to the town of Farmington, and suddenly almost all of the newspapers of Farmington Daily Times of March 18 were gone. Fortunately, there are a few copies left in Aztec Library, and I believe a few people in Farmington still has that newspaper. But the government did its utmost to buy up all the newspapers of Farmington of March 18th, and then secondarily, the U.S. government apparently convinced many citizens of Farmington that this was a very important national defense project, and that these sightings were part of the what they saw was part of the U.S. government, the military program of some kind. And you know, the people were convinced because 1950 was in the height of the Cold War. People were very, very sensitive about it, and they cooperated with the government. So, you know, a lot of people don't even know about Farmington these days, and yet there were so many witnesses on those 3 days. And then unlike these modern eras, you know, most people never carried cameras with them when they walked on the street. And the cameras at that time were bulky cameras, and besides, nobody ever carried cameras. And so this may be one of the reasons why we have not seen any actual photographs of the amazing Farmington UFO sightings of 1950. They may exist, but it's possible that it could be existing in some kind of a vault somewhere that the government is hiding. Who knows? But, things like this make us believe that, perhaps it's all true. What happened in Roswell in 1947, what happened in Aztec in 1948, may indeed have been unexplainable real event. And there are a few people who believe that the amazing Farmington sighting of 1950 may have been some kind of orchestration or manifestation as a memorial by the entities themselves to their fallen comrades in 1947 in Roswell, in 1948 in Aztec, and they manifested themselves over the skies of Farmington by conducting a massive show of themselves and doing some kind of maneuvering to memorialize their fallen, comrades, so to say. And so anything is possible. Anything is possible. And why I'm interested in Roswell, of course, as I said in the beginning, Nancy, that in 1947, many German scientists and engineers were transferred to New Mexico after World War II from Germany, and the United States government was definitely interested in developing and perfecting what's known as the German flying wing technology that they developed in the early 40s in Germany, the Nazi Germany, and including many of the flying wing ramjet engine-equipped flying wing aircraft, such as the Horten brothers of Germany. In fact, the Horten brothers, they had a flying wing ramjet engine technology in 1943 and were tested in Germany. But the United States definitely was interested in this kind of a revolutionary type of flying wing aircraft with the ramjet engine. And so in 1947, it's very possible that the U.S. military was conducting secretive test flights of some of these flying wing aircraft that came from Germany. And some researchers believe that these flying wing prototype aircraft may have been test flown in America, the Western America, for example, in Washington State, all the way to Texas. But many of them were based in New Mexico, White Sands, and even, the desert near Roswell and so on. So there comes speculation by some researchers that possibly the Roswell incident of 1947 may have been part of the cover-up of the U.S. Military's test flights of these revolutionary type of flying wing aircraft. But on the other hand, it's very difficult to really give a definite conclusive proof to all of this. The Roswell incident something really did happen, but exactly what happened is actually, I don't think anybody knows, because I have a tendency, Nancy, to believe that the Roswell incident was somehow staged, either by the military or by the entities themselves, as the beginning of a conditioning process that started in 1947 and leading up to our present era, for some type of a conditioning of belief systems. And I'm interested in this subject from the standpoint that, an advanced civilization from outer space coming to the Earth, traversing such a distance, would never, ever crash. In other words, some people say that the concept of something crashing is a simplistically humanistic concept and empirical scientific methodology and thinking procedure, because no advanced, a civilization that can traverse such a distance and even possibly coming out of their dimension to materialize here will never, ever crash. So some people speculate that the Roswell incident, the only way that the Roswell incident did happen that was a crash was it was purposely crashed, or in other words, purposely staged. And some people believe that the aliens themselves, if they exist, may have even sacrificed their fellow beings to bring the sensitization of the public to this idea. But, there are so many possibilities, it's amazing things, about Roswell. There are so many coincidences, and I don't think there's anything such as coincidence, as you probably said. Did you know that the location of the alleged crash of Roswell in 1947, slightly north of Roswell, the exact location, alleged location of the crash, is exactly 2,012 miles from the equator. And I don't think this is a coincidence. A lot of people don't know about it. But no. At the same time, a lot of people don't seem to connect the symbology in all of this. The state of New Mexico has a town called Aztec. Was it just a coincidence or that they named the town Aztec? And, of course, New Mexico has location known as Toltec, near the Chama, as you go on the railroad, Cumbres and Toltec, scenic railroad. But, names like Toltec and Aztec are definitely Central American concepts, locations associated with the ancient peoples and culture of Central America. So, is this a coincidence? I don't believe so. If you look at a Google satellite map of Dulce, New Mexico, you can clearly see the designs of the parking lot of middle school in Dulce that resemble in design, at least from the air, a design of a Central American deity, the Olmecs and the Toltecs and so on. You can see some designs, but when we had a conference in Dulce last year, there was a scientist from Los Alamos who participated in that conference last year, and he didn't want to tell everybody that he was a scientist from Los Alamos, but he did a presentation on this. He did study the oddities of Dulce, the town of Dulce, as seen from the satellite imagery, and he came to a conclusion that there are several spots and buildings in Dulce that have strange designs that resemble Central American type of deities. And I have seen those satellite photos, and yes, there could be something to it. But the best, the most amazing thing about New Mexico is the fact that, there are many highway patrolmen that live in New Mexico that has amazing experiences. One of the reasons why, Nancy, I came to New Mexico in 1965 was basically to study the Spanish language as spoken in northern New Mexico, because this is the only place in the world today where 16th century Spanish can be heard, spoken by the people of northern New Mexico. But, the secondary reason for coming to New Mexico in 1965 was because of the shocking incident that took place on April 24th, 1964, outside the town of Socorro, New Mexico, whereby a highway patrol officer, Lonnie Zamora, witnessed a metallic oval-shaped object land on the desert with a tripod, and he witnessed that whole thing and its sudden departure. And, this was a headline news in 1964, and I read about that incident in an English-language newspaper while I was a high school student in Japan, 1964. And so my curiosity about New Mexico really took hold in 1964. And the following year, I came to Albuquerque, to study the Spanish language. But as I said, that may have been a secondary reason. But in 1964, a lot of things did take place, according to many researchers, and one of that is, in 1964, at Holloman Air Force Base near White Sands, south of White Sands, there was an alleged contact that occurred between unknown craft and unknown entities and the U.S. military at Holloman Air Force Base, and that took place allegedly in 1964. Coincidentally, the same year that Lonnie Zamora had witnessed this silver metallic object sitting on the sand, 400 feet away from him, in broad daylight. And so, was this a coincidence? Was that object the same object that, purportedly landed in Holloman Air Force Base that same time? I'm not sure. But, things like this really makes one think. What's amazing. What's amazing, Nancy, is that the New Mexico has a lot of Native American population, and the Native American population is very important in all of this, is because of their rich cultural and spiritual traditions and beliefs, and their belief is that their ancestors came from underground. And the many Native Americans believe in the existence of paranormal in this world. And if you go to Dulce, New Mexico, yes, there are many, many local residents, the Hickory Apache people, who believe in the paranormal. And so my opinion is that, yes, in the town of Dulce and the Hikari Apache Nation, yes, there are many cases of paranormal activity because, coincidentally, they themselves, the residents themselves, believe in the that in this world there are things that are not seen that is as just as real as things that are seen, you know. And so, you know, the that's why they report sightings of Bigfoot even today. And then strange objects seen in the sky. These sighting reports go unceased, you know, even to this day. I get reports from the former police deputy of Dulce, Mr. Julian, Gabe Julian, who occasionally reports of these sightings even today to me. And, and you know, the most fascinating thing about all of this, Nancy, is that the U.S. government is well aware of these beliefs of local Native American people. And so it's a convenient location for the government to conduct any psychological operations programs or any programs under the cover of local Native American areas. So, you know, there are rumors that say that the U.S. government had been experimenting on biological warfare programs in near Dulce for many years, using anthrax and other materials and, you know, experimenting on bovine diseases and creating, you know, artificial diseases as part of the so-called bio-warfare program. So it definitely would have been a convenient location to conduct such experiments using the convenience of Native American, the reservation lands. And, you know, I've talked so much in just, you know, a short time today, but, you know, I could go on and on and see, but the important thing is that, yeah, I think as we approach in a couple more years, I think that we just have to wait until the public is ready to accept some kind of a disclosure about all of this, but I don't think the disclosure will take place from the government.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, yeah. The only disclosure that will probably come is from the entities themselves, and that will happen when mankind starts to change the view of the world and the cosmic view. And I believe, Nancy, that December 21st, 2012 may be the time for either a gradual or a sudden shift in the thinking procedure of humanity for the betterment of humanity, hopefully. And so I await with much enthusiasm December 21st of 2012. I don't think it's going to be the end of the world, but I think it's just going to be the beginning of a new, you know, paradigm. And but that's all I have to say right now, Nancy. I kept rambling on, and you know, but I just wanted to share these things.
That's okay. Nori, could you do me a favor and give out your face page address? Because you do have a lot of information that people can go back and check.
Yes, I believe in, you know, that all the information must be made public, available to the public. So actually, I am on Facebook, and all they have to do is just check me out on Facebook, and I will answer any questions that people may have. Just type in my name, and I can be contacted on Facebook as well as MySpace. But, you know, I don't believe in hiding anything. Anything that I say or write or do is for the public. So I have no censorship.
Okay.
Anything that I write, anybody can use it. as long as I am accredited.
Okay, Nori, spell your name because...
Yes, my name is spelled. First name is N-O-R-I-O, Norio. N-O-R-I-O, and the last name is spelled H-A-Y-A-K-A-W-A. H-A-Y-A-K-A-W-A, and it's pronounced Norio Hayakawa. It's very easy. Just check me out on the Internet. Do a Google search or Yahoo search, and there will be about 150,000 information on myself.
All right, Nori. Our time's actually up. I thank you for taking the time, and thank you for doing your rambling on.
Thank you so much, Nancy. God bless you, and thank you, and continue your great work.
Thank you. You take care. May God bless all of you. Have a great week, and we'll talk next time. Take care. Bye now.